Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
That's one of my favorite parts of the day when I'm standing behind the curtain. The curtain parts and I come out and
have no place to go.
I shake it a little for the audience.
Have no place to go.
And then I shake it a little more.
Have no place to go.
And then the audience says, please stop shaking it.
Have no place to go.
Two, three, four.
Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
Did you just pull something?
Yeah, I did, actually. I
thought so.
That's fine. HR's on the phone.
Shouldn't shake it without talking to a doctor first. This is show number 1041. Final day of November. Tomorrow we will be live at Horton's in LaGrange for Hometown Voices, sponsored by Allstate. Tis the season to be merry and bright, Dave. It's our broadcast, Under the Lights. Join me and everybody on the program tomorrow at Horton's Home Lighting in LaGrange. Tomorrow, 6 to 10 a.m. You come by any time. It's all Christmased up there.
What are you guys going to do? You like to be in the dark all the time.
Yeah, it's going to be
tough.
Now
you're going to be, you better bring your sunglasses.
That's a good idea. I should wear my shades.
You guys are going to freak out.
It's a good idea.
By the way, you know who may stop by tomorrow morning? Who's going to be out that way?
Who?
Troy Murray.
Oh, good. Oh, that's true. It's kind of in his neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, cool.
Getting the hometown holiday spirit and the spirit of giving. We're going to give you a chance to win tickets to Elf the Musical if you're on hand or listening tomorrow. And we certainly appreciate you listening. Though, honestly, you could go out and even recruit more listeners. So, you know, if you get a chance, maybe go out today, spend some time this morning and going, hey, how come you're not listening to the Steve Cochran Show? Let me adjust your radio for you.
We don't run out of kilowatts.
That's right. We don't run out of whatever we need to keep this on the air. Coffee and pastries tomorrow, Dave, courtesy of Blueberry Hill Cafe. And you can go to the events page, WGNradio.com, for details. That's tomorrow at Horton's Home Lighting in LaGrange from 6 to 10. And, you know, depending on how you behave tomorrow, Dave may go home with you for the weekend. So
I have no plans. Well, I do, actually.
Yeah, but you're willing to make an exception.
Yes.
Let's see. Nick will join us in a few minutes. Chuck Todd will join us in a few minutes. I've tried to make it a policy in life not to ask questions I know the answer to. But in the case of the Matt Lauer story, I got to bring it up to Chuck. I mean, it'd be ridiculous if I don't.
They're colleagues, co-workers, or were.
So I'll bring it up to Chuck, and we'll also talk about things that are bigger. Matt Lauer's made a statement this morning that I don't have in front of me. Steve, do you have it?
I can get it here pretty quickly.
Yeah,
give me
just,
a sec.
Just released in the last few minutes. The thing that everybody needs to remember that engage in any sort of victim blaming here is unless the accused says, no, I didn't, and then provides reason to believe they didn't, they did.
I have it here.
All right, would you read it for me?
There are no words to express my sorrow and regret for the pain I have caused others by words and actions. To the people I have hurt, I'm truly sorry. I'm writing this as I realize the depth of the damage and disappointment I have left behind at home and at NBC. Some of what is being said about me is untrue and mischaracterized, but there is enough truth in the stories to make me feel embarrassed and ashamed. I regret that my shame is now shared by the people I cherish dearly. Repairing the damage will take a lot of time and soul-searching, and I'm committed to beginning that effort. It's now my full-time job. The last 2 days have forced me to take a very hard look at my own troubling flaws. It's been humbling. I'm blessed to be surrounded by the people I love. I thank them for their patience and grace. From Matt Lauer.
Okay. I don't know, you don't need to add anything to it, I guess, or subtract anything from it. It is what it is. At 6:13, why don't we do the top six at six?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
Item number one, retiring, no longer running, Congressman Luis Gutierrez says, quote, I haven't decided to run for president. I haven't decided to run. Well, that means he might decide to run. But then again, we all might decide to run. Dave, have you completely ruled out running for president?
I haven't ruled it out, no.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So Luis Gutierrez may, in fact, run for president. I really don't think that's going to happen. But it's an interesting rumor out there to keep his name in public. And again, I just want to make sure people understand the rumor that was floating around Washington 2 days ago that he was on the take for some campaign funds. There's been nothing made of that. So because of that, I think it's important to say that it was nothing but a rumor. We've said it the whole time. It was nothing but a rumor. But these rumors that pop up in Washington may turn out to be true or not true. In this case, there appears to be nothing behind it. 17 Chicago high schools struggling to survive, enrollment plummeting, performance faltering, students offered fewer choices and resources in near-empty schools. Decisions on the fate of those schools remains to be seen. As far as the timeline goes, we also don't know that. The mayor has not been in a while. We should probably see if we can get a drive-by from the mayor and ask him a few of those questions as well. Next. A Downers Grove teacher is on leave after an ex-student is claiming inappropriate sexual behavior. Do we know any of the details of this, Steve?
This is the teacher.
A male or female teacher, not that it matters, but for the basis of the story.
No, I don't have any more details than what have been what you have there. So.
And this doesn't appear to be tied to the spate of stories that we're talking about, but just another incident.
It appears to be another incident, yeah, not connected to any of the others.
However, this one is next. Minnesota Public Radio is cutting all ties with Garrison Keillor, he of a Prairie Home Companion, after allegations of inappropriate behavior, which he seems to have accepted, though he would characterize it differently. Said there was a female colleague who was in an emotional state, and to comfort her, he put his hand on her back. She was wearing something that apparently had an open back. I don't know, Mary, what would you describe a shirt like that?
Like a halter
tie in the back.
Top with a tie at the neck, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Or not strapless, but it would probably be a halter type thing.
So he put his hand on her back, and he said his hand went up about 8 inches on her back, which I would think would involve her bra or something at that point, but...
Or she probably didn't have one on.
That's possible. But Garrison Keillor said she recoiled. He apologized. He also wrote her an email of apology, but she said, don't worry about it. We'll move on. And now this has come up. So why it's come up now, we're not sure. Garrison Keillor has apologized and removed himself and said this is the first time he's been fired. And this officially makes him a broadcaster.
Yeah, he actually retired from doing the weekly Prairie Home Companion show.
Right?
About a year and a half ago, I want to say. And so he's been semi-retired for quite a while, not doing anything regularly. He has been a really outspoken critic, though, in his written essays that he does every week in newspapers like the Chicago Tribune about the Trump administration. So that's, I throw that out there for
him. Timing's unfortunate for him. The day before this broke, he wrote a piece about how Al Franken shouldn't be forced to retire, or to resign, I should say.
Yeah, he lives in St. Paul, Minnesota, so he's one of Franken's constituents.
I know him a bit from my Minnesota days. He's an odd duck. Listen, this is just all part of it. And he seems to have owned it. The awkwardness of the moment or whatever. So we'll see what happens here, though we don't know why the woman involved here, if she said, it's fine, we're moving on, if she brought it back up. We don't know why it came up at this point.
He said he could explain it, but it would be too complicated, I think is what he said.
Sometimes in the explanation of something, do make it worse.
It gets worse, yeah. And he did say he was the one that never even hugged people in the office. He always stayed in the corner and avoided people. So.
I remember when I met him, he was doing a book tour, and I did an interview with him. He was very standoffish, didn't even want to shake hands.
And he's got an uncomfortable handshake.
Yeah.
You don't want to just profile people based on their handshakes, but there's a certain way a grown man ought to shake a hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
It's like a wimpy handshake or firm handshake.
Yeah, in his case, it's a handshake going, I really want this handshake to be over.
Yeah.
So, next. Our friends at GM set to demonstrate a growing fleet of self-driving cars today. Remember, GM was one of the first people to come out with the electric car, the Chevy Bolt.
Right.
And the Chevy Bolt, the first Chevy Bolts, I think, were $1.5 million a piece. They were a little pricey. They're very affordable now. And what you're going to see a lot more of are these electric stations popping up everywhere. Sometimes if you're in parking garages in the city, you'll see them. And around, I know in Evanston, There's an office building in Evanston that I occasionally park at that's mm-hmm. got six or seven of them lined up next to each other.
The United Center has some.
Do they?
And you always find that space. Hey, that's great. There's a parking space right by the door, mm-hmm. and it's not a handicapped spot. So, hey, I'm going to pull in. Well, wait a minute.
Yep.
Can't go in there.
Yep.
You know, the thing about the Chevy Bolt, too, I mean, when I was buying a car this year, I thought about it. It gets 238 miles on one battery. Yeah. Which is, I think, of leaps and bounds above all of the others.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it's not that expensive. It's about $36,000.
So, yeah, it's come way
down. Yeah.
And then there's this. This is going to make you feel old. I apologize to all of you. I apologize to myself. 35 years ago today, Michael Jackson released Thriller.
Wow.
What?
35 years ago today. I would have been a disc jockey for about a year at that point.
35 1982?
Years.
1982?
Would that be
35
years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I remember it was big on MTV. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was revolutionary. Cutting
edge. Everybody
was
doing the dance.
Jake, give me a little Thriller out after we talk to Nick, which we'll do next. Here's traffic.
And traffic.
Oh, by the way, this is all sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
What to see? What's out at the show? I need to know the place and when.
6:26.
But there's one guy on GM's Cochran Show.
Steve Cochran Show. I thank
you. What he says will make us stay or go. He is
Nick Giglio. 2 to 5 in the morning. Nobody better. We've tried to give him earlier shows. He said, no. These are my people. This is my time. And sounds better than ever. How are you, man?
Good. Thank you, buddy. Feels like I haven't talked to you in 15 years.
I don't see you anymore. So one of us has to...
I was off the last couple of Thursdays, too, so...
One of us has to change our schedule.
Okay.
I'm thinking about starting a morning show around noon anyway, because this seems very early to be on the air. All right, couple of movies. This Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is getting a lot of positive buzz. What do we know?
It's absolutely, without question, one of the very, very best movies of the year. And I've seen it twice. This is the reason, movies like this are the reason why I go to movies. Incredibly well written. Martin McDonagh wrote and directed it. It's about a Frances McDormand plays a mother whose daughter was raped and killed. And it's 7-8 months have gone by and nothing has been done. They haven't found a suspect. They haven't found anything. So she puts a message on three billboards right outside the town, questioning the authority and naming Woody Harrelson's character as, why hasn't anything been done? It causes a huge stir, causes a lot of problems in the town. Woody Harrelson is the police chief. One of his officers under him is played by the great Sam Rockwell. And it is extraordinarily well written. And Frances McDormand doesn't win Best Actress for this. There's no justice.
She's one of the best actors of our time. She also has an actor quality that can help you identify if somebody's going to be any good, and that she's weird as the day is long.
Oh, and Fargo, gee.
She's so a very weird, strange, intense individual, but I think that goes to her success on stage and on screen.
I agree with you, and she's an interesting character, and she's got to be weird. She's married to one of the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
So, right there, you got to be weird. But this is a performance that is just astonishing in its power. The fury of it, the anger that's involved, but it's also very, very funny. And, I don't want to give away too much in the plot because it's consistently surprising. And it is at once very funny and then very moving and terrifying and violent. And it's every single emotion that you can get times 10 is inside this movie. It is perfectly directed. It is, I think, the best screenplay of the year. If Martin McDonagh doesn't at least get nominated for original screenplay, there's no justice. And I can't say enough. First of all, the entire cast is astonishing. Right. Everybody is not only well cast, but they're great. But my God, Sam Rockwell. This guy has been consistently one of the best actors working past 20 years. And I really, really hope he finally gets the award recognition that he deserves. He's amazing in this movie. And the arc that his character takes from the beginning of the film, as it goes on, is just great. I mean, like I said, I've seen it twice. It was even better the second time. Way near the top of my list this year as one of the best movies of the year, without question.
This is not the time to do it, but we got to talk at some point about what the Oscars are going to be like this year in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein thing. A couple other movies that are already out but worthy of your consideration and your attendance, Lady Bird.
Lady Bird is so good. Another one, I mean, this is Three Billboards, Lady Bird. These are going to be titles that are going to be on my list of the best movies of the year. This is Greta Gerwig, who's an actress and a writer. This is her directorial debut, semi-autobiographical. Saoirse Ronan, who is just an international treasure as far as I'm concerned.
Isn't she hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend?
It's an Irish version of SNL. She's hosting, and U2 is the musical guest.
There you go.
So it's an all-Irish version of SNL this weekend, and I can't wait.
Right.
But she plays a rebellious sort of teenage girl who wants to find her voice, doesn't want to live in the town that she lives in, wants to move someplace where there's culture. She makes up her nickname, Lady Bird, and she's dealing with all the stuff that teenagers deal with. But here's the thing. Her parents are played by, and this is just let's represent Steppenwolf, shall we? Tracy Letts is her father, and the great Laurie Metcalf is her mother.
Wow.
What separates this movie, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of coming-of-age movies that have come out, but this is a movie that is distinctly and defiantly told from the female point of view. The men in this movie are all secondary. This is told from the point of view of, you know, of the women, the mother and the daughter in particular. The Laurie Metcalf character who plays her mother is so great. This is as good a mother-daughter relationship movie as Terms of Endearment. And that's not to be taken lightly because Terms of Endearment is one of the best mother-daughter movies ever made. This is right up there. And it's so refreshing because a woman wrote it. She directed it. It's based on her life. Again, Laurie Metcalf, we're talking Oscar nomination for sure for supporting actress. It's a great movie. And just, you know, I mean, I know everybody's heard, oh, it's the female coming of age movie, blah, blah, blah. This is a lot different. And it's just distinctly original. And it's great.
We're out of time already, but Coco is tremendous too, as reviewed by our boss Todd Manley and his 9-year-old daughter Gia. They saw it the other day, loved it. The Disaster Artist with the Franco brothers and Seth Rogen's a new movie for the weekend. But give me a plug for Christmas Vacation, because that's your next movie Tuesday, right?
Yes, this Tuesday the 5th, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. $14 to get in, free parking and free popcorn. The movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it. You can get there at 7, have some dinner. Reserve your seats now. It's this Tuesday at the AMC Rosemont 18. Go to amctheaters.com, reserve your seats, and we'll all watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, a very, very, very funny movie.
Have you seen The Ref yet this season, your favorite Christmas movie?
I always watch it on Christmas Eve.
There you go.
It's a tradition for me. It's my favorite Christmas movie ever, and I always watch it on Christmas Eve.
It's a touching tale. AMCtheaters.com for the website for Nick's Christmas Vacation. Tuesday night. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Chuck Todd coming up. We'll do the big story next. Andrea's off this morning. She'll be back with us live tomorrow at Hortons in LaGrange. Vic, we'll do that next on 720 WGN. It is 6:44. Matt Lauer has issued an apology statement today. We'll read it for you again here coming up in a little bit as my friend Chuck Todd joins us. I don't know that there's a lot that could be added to this from what happened overnight, but is there anything you want to add to this story before we get on with things?
Not really.
Yeah,
because you know, look, it's in the same way. It's shameful. It's hurtful. It's destructive. I'm impressed with the woman that came forward, very brave, to do what she did, let alone now the other people and the other stories are coming out. It's, you know, I give Matt credit. I think his statement this morning is a start, and I'll leave it at that.
And I mentioned this yesterday when at the top of the Today Show, you can love somebody and you can like somebody a great deal that you work with and still be appalled by their actions. And for those of you who work at NBC, you have to process all this stuff in real time. So let me move on here to the Trump world.
The bigger picture in this story, in this moment, cultural moment, we have to figure out what we'll forgive.
Mm-hmm.
We figure out what we're willing, what we want people to do to earn our collective forgiveness.
Right?
We have to decide what that is. And I don't think we're there yet.
I completely agree. It's a big swirling mess. Last Sunday, I watched you on Meet the Press with Nancy Pelosi, and it's funny because a texter brought up a great question this morning, and it's a general question, but it goes to the Nancy Pelosi thing and what you have to do every day on Meet the Press and MTP daily, and that is when a politician looks you in the eye and doesn't answer your question, no matter how many times you pose it, how many times you speak for the rest of us, and are asking the power brokers what we need to know, how do you handle that frustration?
Sometimes you just keep asking the question. It depends what it is. It depends on the moment. It depends how much time. This is a question I get frequently, right? You know, they'll say, hey, you asked a couple of great questions. They didn't answer your question. You know, why didn't you push them this time or this? It is all feel in the moment. Sometimes, sometimes you know certain politicians that if you ask them three times, they will finally crack and they'll, you know. There are others. I remember asking Ted Cruz once 9 times the same question. He just wouldn't budge and give an answer. But that in itself gave the answer. I mean, the way I look at it is that I try to follow up as many times as necessary so I know the viewer at least knows what they're getting, if that makes sense, from the person. They know, hey, they're deflecting, they're hiding. And if you've made that point, well, then actually the person has answered the question. Oddly enough.
Yeah, answer by their lack of an answer. And the other thing is you have an internal clock going off in your head. There's other material you want to get to. All of those are in play.
Yep, always. That's I always say I wish I always had 5 more minutes for every interview, but if I did, the show wouldn't be as good.
Yeah.
Viewers would, you know, it would be it's one of those things, just trust me. Each interview might be better, but collectively it wouldn't be a better show.
And it's one of the good things about the podcast. It does give room for a little longer ability to stretch out. So I'd encourage you to go to that as well in this, what, 71st year of Meet the Press?
Yeah, we're in year 71, yeah.
And I think it might last. As we continue, the Republican tax plan gets through committee. So you're fairly positive this is going to be a go?
Yeah, you know, it's such a surreal week here in Washington in watching this sort of march of the tax bill. There's no doubt Republican leadership feel like they have to do this, right? It's one of these, it doesn't matter how bad this thing may not sell. It doesn't matter how bad this could end up polling in 6 months. They feel as if they don't do it, it's a bigger disaster. And it's all taking place at the same time that literally President Trump is having one of his shakiest, most unstable moments of his presidency, and sort of the lashing out and the conspiracy theories and all of this stuff. It's really surreal that we're not having a serious debate on the impact of this tax bill. And at the same time, we have this sort of, but we also have the president's temperament sort of exploding in our face right now. So it is surreal because the tax thing is such a sort of normal Washington story, dysfunctional story. And then there's Trump.
And then there's Trump, leads me to this. You're going to have Corey Lewandowski and David Bossie on about their book on Sunday on Meet the Press, right?
We are. We'll have the first interview with them. I get the book later today, so I haven't even been able to look at the book yet. But we get our first copy later today. We'll find out what they have to say.
It's Let Trump Be Trump, which brings up the big question of the week. Our mutual friend Pat Brady, you as a journalist, me as an opinion giver, we've all questioned his stability in different ways and his ability to do the job since the moment he announced. It's gotten much louder this week. The questions have gotten much louder and the actions have gotten much more apparent that we have a problem here. Yesterday, the retweet
McCarthyism on us. I'll be honest. I'm so angry at what he did with the retweets of the Muslim.
That's where I was going.
These crazy Muslim videos, and frankly, what he did to my colleagues, and the sort of McCarthyism. It was straight out of Joseph McCarthy's book. The sort of the libelous and slanderous stuff he wrote and said about Joe Scarborough, Andy Lack, and Phil Griffin. Too. I mean, this is. A sitting president of the United States doing this stuff.
And 40 million Twitter followers means that 40 million impressions were made. Whether or not they stuck is not as important as the fact that the irresponsibility of the moment leads to the damage that takes place. We saw this in real time, too, with the CNN question of their credibility and the Libyan media using it against the people when CNN got actual footage of a human slave sale a week ago.
I was thinking about yesterday. What's it like for the Muslim American soldier when he sees the commander in chief?
Absolutely.
You know how many Muslim Americans serve in the United States Armed Forces? Quite a few.
Absolutely.
Thousands. I just think about that for a second. Their commander in chief, who may be ordering them into a war very soon in North Korea. If he just thought about that aspect, he'd realize how damaging tweeting those videos were.
Yeah, I wonder if he would, because this clinical definition of a sociopath.
I wonder what John Kelly thinks.
Absolutely.
That former retired General John Kelly might have an opinion on this, but he's obviously chosen to let Trump be Trump.
That's the thing that's really, to me, the most difficult to understand over what's happened in the last week, because this is nothing about John Kelly's service to America, which is distinguished and deserves to be respected, but his experience as chief of staff and babysitting this grown man is not going well, and at some point he has to own that.
He does. I think he... Look, people close to him, snarky as I just was a few minutes ago, people close to him will tell me, the last thing anybody wants is for him to be fired. You know, that there is this mindset that he's got to do just enough to stay in the president's good graces if you want him there to be a guardrail. That's the argument that his folks will make, his supporters will make. But at some point, are you enabling too much? I understand that line of thinking, but at some point, are you enabling too much? And right now, the president seems as if he is just unencumbered by anything right now.
And the ultimate enablers are Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and the Republican-controlled Congress trying to hold on to whatever they can. And in the end, I believe they're going to regret the fact that they created their own destruction.
At some point, this bill is going to come due for them on the decision to let this element into their party. It started back in 2010 before Trump, but when they let what they thought was just grassroots enthusiasm, and it turned out that it surfaced, it created new dark corners of the internet, new dark corners of this, of an alt-right movement. And yeah, this bill's going to come due, and it's going to be a bill they probably can't pay when it comes to.
That's one of the hardest things as far as I'm concerned. Every day of this, sure, it gets fatiguing and it's frightening and it's all of those things. But this is not something we can't fix. But it takes honor and it takes patriotism and it takes courage and it takes a lack of self-centeredness. And I don't see any of those qualities in the current people that represent us in Congress. So that's incredibly disappointing.
Steve, and I just look at, we're a private company, so we can act fast. Other private companies have acted fast, but it's like when you watch all of this taking place, this cultural moment taking place in sexual harassment, for instance, and then you watch the political world not hold themselves
right
as accountable as the rest of America is doing, and not wanting to even hold. It's like not just not holding yourself accountable, not wanting to be a role model for the country,
right.
Not wanting to
not caring,
and instead they're the lagging indicator in this moment. The lagging indicator, not the leading indicator. Elected officials are supposed to be the leading indicator if they're good leaders. But we have a group. If you can find me a good leader, let me know. Right now, it doesn't feel like anybody wants to pick up this mantle right now.
I completely agree. It's never been more gutless. Chuck Todd, 1947, the podcast, MTP Daily, and Meet the Press this Sunday with the co-authors of Let Trump Be Trump. Well, we'll see about that. Corey Lewandowski and David Bossy in their first interview. Chuck, I appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, Steve.
See ya. It's 6:55. Peb Radio will join us here in a few minutes. Whatever. Matt Lauer has issued a statement of apology, which I'll read for you in just a second. But I want to play you a piece of audio before I do and tell you that the Variety piece that came out yesterday afternoon, we can make available in link form at my Twitter feed, Ed Cochran Show or Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. I'm not going to go through the specifics. It's pretty appalling. One thing that really stood out was the fact that he had a button underneath his desk where if a woman came into his office, he could hit the button and lock the door. Here is the piece of audio. Bill O'Reilly on set with the Today.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
Welcome my friends to the studio. It's nice to have your friends come in and play. Pat Brady's here. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
And Bridget Gander's here from your Cook County Board. What? Who do you represent? What number?
10th District.
The 10th?
10th.
Are you getting primaried?
I don't know yet. We still have a couple more days for people to file petitions.
Well, don't invite the competition.
No, I'm not. But it's free country.
Yeah, it is that. Nice to see both of you. Why don't we start with the state? What's going on in Springfield?
Nothing.
All right, cool. What's going on in Cook County? No, it is. There's nothing going on between now and Christmas?
No, everybody's focused on the getting their petitions in. So the big news is probably Monday when the petition filing date is up. We'll see who's going to run, who's actually in.
And sexual harassment is the news. There was going to be mandatory training,
yes,
of everyone involving lobbyists. You know,
I think it already started. I think the House and the legislative members already went.
We're also doing no shoplifting training.
Yeah, exactly.
And no hitting someone in the face training.
I don't want to be a jerk, but aren't there some things you should know?
You'd think, but it was real 2 weeks ago when I was down there, or three, whenever the end of the veto session was. It's very quiet down there. Then there were trackers at the local pubs.
Good.
Oh.
Yeah, so the one famous one that's right on the street there, there was a tracker there late at night.
My concern is that this mandatory training that everybody wants to do is more a corporate protection thing as opposed to doing any real good in the world. Do you see it that way?
I think it helps people on the margins that may not understand that a hug or a certain kind of hug or a statement might be offensive. They might learn that, but the people that are going to do it, I don't think it makes any difference. To me, it's more important to have a reporting mechanism
exactly.
that works than the training.
For sure.
And does that exist now? Is there
yes,
an IG?
New legislation, I think they did set up a hotline, but that hotline's only good if somebody answers the phone. And what happened the last time is they had 27 allegations that sat in the inbox.
Well, they did hire that IG. You know, in 24 hours, all of a sudden they had a woman, she's a former U.S. attorney, who's going to be in this role.
And she's reviewing the files.
We should follow up with that. Sandberg, the new IG who's in charge of what amounts to HR in Springfield, let's see if she's willing to talk or if she can talk, because I don't know what the legal restrictions are. What about Cook County? You talked about this a little bit last time.
Yeah, you know, what's going on in Cook County?
Well, in regards to the sexual harassment thing.
You know, we're going to increase it with the ethics. And I have to say, I haven't heard a lot coming out of it, but I think the same thing about Springfield. There's got to be a lot of people laying awake at night thinking, oh boy, now the power dynamic has shifted. Because now as people come forward, you know, they're believed. And I think that's the real difference is it wasn't like this stuff wasn't happening. It was that people thought the cost was too high. No one's going to believe me. They're going to say I'm crazy or I'm a liar. And so I'm just going to keep it to myself. But, you know, I give a lot of these younger women a ton of credit because I think when you're older, you've just gotten used to taking it and moving on. And they're not going to tolerate it. And I think it's a really good thing.
And think of the risks to their careers.
Yeah.
To do that. You know, in the old days, you'd call them a beefer. That's a complainer.
Exactly.
You know, somebody complain, whether about sexual harassment or, you know, they get that reputation, they never get rid of it.
Well, the only way this changes is if young women teach their daughters and their daughters teach their daughters. But the son's part of this doesn't get away either. It's not too late to sit down with your teenage sons or sit down with your college-age sons and go, hey, you don't have any of your friends doing this, do you? Because this is completely inappropriate behavior. And, you know, we get back to the hug thing. Because if I hear one more guy go, well, I guess you can't hug anybody anymore. If you are a grown man and you can't tell from body language when a woman would like you to hug him or not, she doesn't want you to hug you. She doesn't want a hug from you, I should say.
Also, you want to say, there's a lot of hugs. There's a like, hey, I'm going to slap you on the back kind of hug.
Uh-huh.
And then there's, I'm going to put my both hands around your waist kind of hug. Guess what? Nobody likes that.
Yeah. The greeting hug is, I'm so happy to see you,
right.
And break.
Yeah.
Yes. Not the clutch and hold. You're not tackling them. So I don't know. I get frustrated. And maybe I shortchange that some people don't understand this, but I think men are still trying to find the easy way out in too many ways.
You know, interesting. We were just talking for a second before we came on about it not being a sex thing, but a power thing.
Oh.
That's what's I knew that kind of conceptually, but never really got it till I hear all this stuff. I go, this isn't about sex. This is about power. If you have a buzzer on your desk to lock somebody in, that's a power thing. Like, well, Matt Lauer.
Right. And you just get to, it's like you got to take a little bit of privilege. You get to push the line. And at some point, you know, you come up to the line so many times, you don't even know where it is anymore.
Psychologists will also tell you that people like Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly and now Matt Lauer, in other words, they hate women. They just do.
Yeah.
And they never figured out why. And
why they hate themselves? I mean, why would you hate women?
For a million different reasons. But yeah, there's a lot of self-loathing going on from here to the White House. The thing I do worry about for people, whether it's in Cook County.
We got a lot of women that hate us.
Yeah, but that's a different
story. That's deserved.
That's a whole different story.
That's not a psychological problem.
Okay, right.
Rational response.
Why would I add anything
to
that?
Well, you jumped on that one, Bridget.
It's 7:18. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about the mess in D.C.
I mean, Andrew's not here. I got
talking politics as we do with more intensity and focus on a Thursday. Bridget Gaynor's here from your Cook County Board. Pat Brady's here, and Eric Adelstein's here. Eric, where do you work?
I work at AL Media sometimes.
Yes, when you're not just goofing off and running around.
That's right.
There's a similarity between the four of us in that we all have daughters. So before I leave this sexual harassment discussion, one last thing that comes up is this wave working for the unknown folks that aren't celebrities? Because we hear about all the celebrities, and there's a certain power and a certain wave to all of it, WAVE, that goes on, a tsunami of get out, unless you're in politics. Is it working down the street? Is it working at the logistics office? Is it working at the accounting office? Or are people still in the same boat they were before? Do you guys know anything of that world since Harvey Weinstein?
I think that the big public displays will filter down, because I think the biggest reason women didn't come forward is because they thought they weren't going to be believed, and they thought that the punishment or the sanction to their career or whatever was going to be high. But when you have all of this stuff, I mean, we've had, you know, people at Aon say, God, I had no idea this was as prevalent as it was. And so it just makes the next person, even if they're unknown and not powerful, it makes it more credible, because you know this stuff is out there. So I think it eventually will matter.
You have to hope.
Yeah. I think it has a huge impact, because, you know, like any criminal enforcement or rule enforcement, there's deterrence. And when you risk the humiliation, when you risk careers, you know, forget the moral and what's right and wrong, just the personal selfish consequence for bad behavior now, it used to go unpunished. I'll tell you a quick story. My daughter, who's 16, watched, and I don't mean to pick on Matt Lauer's co-hosts, but she watched their on-air mm-hmm. statement yesterday, and yep. her first response was, what a crock. Give me a break. Don't tell me how much you love the guy and that you had no idea this was going on. Even she, in that moment, was like, come on. They didn't know any of this was going on. And the Variety story now comes out, and this other stuff comes out. You can't – I mean, yes, there are isolated incidents, and there are mistakes in what body language caused. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about repetitive, sustained patterns of chronic behavior. And there are people who see it and observe it and don't do anything about it. And that's got
to
stop.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example here. There was a guy that used to work here in management who at one point – I knew he was a creep. And at one point I walked into his office, and he had a couple of – 20-year-old interns in his office on his desk behind him because he couldn't reach up and change this light bulb, and they were younger and they could do it. And I got the girls down. I then took them aside and said, don't ever be in a room alone with him. And then I went in and screamed at him. And then I went to HR. The guy eventually lost his job, not specifically because of that. He was also a terrible person. But you do have to step in.
Right.
And when you know. Now, but here's the line. And then there's no excuse for Matt Lauer or any of these guys. If you believe and you hear rumors, as everyone in show business had, that Matt Lauer was cheating on his wife constantly, well, do you step in if you're working at the Today Show then? Because, or is that consenting adults and it's none of your business?
Well, here's the line I would say. It's cheating on your wife or your husband is not a crime, and it might not be somebody else's business. But it's somebody else's business when it begins to affect innocent people's lives. Now, I'll give you one example from the stories. I don't know whether this is true or not, but it's been reported that he had a secret button under his desk to lock his door under. Now, I would bet you $1 million if I had it that Matt Lauer didn't install that button without NBC executives.
Absolutely. Well, knowing, executives or engineers or program managers. Or
somebody is aware
producers. Absolutely.
Of what's going on. And yes, he's a person of power, and he supposedly wielded enormous authority in that building. But you can't tell me there weren't higher-ups who were making money and are responsible for shareholder amounts who said, you know, I'm going to look the other way.
Well, we saw it at Fox. We saw it at Fox with Bill O'Reilly. We literally have a clause in his contract that, hey, Bill, eventually you're going to have to pay your own settlements in writing. So, listen, we just hope that wherever you work, that you're taking care of yourself and your business is actually standing up for the first time. Is this going to be an issue in the governor's race? As in, will the governor's candidates, including the governor, are they going to have to talk about sexual harassment?
Well, you know, they had a forum, I think it was last week. Marianne Ahern was leading it, and, you know, she's a great reporter. She asked, they weren't, Pritzker wasn't there. There might have been one other one who wasn't there. But all the ones that were there were asked, have you ever signed any sort of non-disclosure or settlement?
Interesting question.
Well, it's all men, right? There's no women running for governor, which is weird and odd and strange in this moment. And, you know, they all vehemently said, no, I don't know that she's asked the people that weren't there yet. So to the extent that it's an issue that comes up, I think it is. I think there's a broader issue in the 2018 electorate that I think you will see more women being successful. And part of the impact of Franken and Weinstein is it's not just a Trump or Republican or, you know, issue. And I think a lot of voters, men and women, will say, let's just elect some women here and not, you know, have to deal with these creeps. So,
well, look at our Illinois congressional delegation elections. You've got Sol Flores is running for Luis Gutierrez's seat. Betsy Lonergan Dirkinson is running for against Rodney Davis downstate. You've got Marie Newman running against Dan Lipinski. You know, there's going to be primaries in the state, which we often don't see competitive primaries, and you see a lot of women entering these races, and I think that's going to be really healthy.
You've been incredibly quiet.
Well, I agree with everything. In fact, I think, and I mostly agreed with Eric's daughter, because I watched the same thing and thought the same thing. So we're probably the same intellectual level.
But don't give yourself that kind of raise.
I know. Yeah. I thought the same thing. What a bunch of
Do you think? And it's a different story because it was at least on some level consenting adults. But not since Jack Ryan has there been sex as a big part of the discussion for the governor's race. I don't know how it doesn't become part of the discussion here.
I think it will be, but I agree with these two guys that it's a good year to run as a woman.
Right.
I think it's going to be a really good year, and it could be all this, including the Trump. Talking to some people yesterday for Republicans nationally, it could be 2006 on steroids. So it could be very bad unless we get the ship righted here pretty quickly.
Yeah, and
I'm bleeding into the Roy Moore stuff.
Yeah, and overcorrecting at some points isn't so bad if people have reasonable competencies because sometimes you get, well, just elect somebody else, just anybody else. You still would like the most competent person for the job, but without having a number of women in these positions of power. I mean, we should never, ever again see a picture of a committee hearing in Congress talking about the future of women's health, and they're all guys that look like me.
You know, though, these guys may have a different
version of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
But a thing that I think may be a critical moment was the Meet the Press interview Sunday of Nancy Pelosi and her terrible answer on Conyers. At that, to me, the Democrats ceded the high ground by her not coming out stronger in defense of the women, the people that actually complained. And when she made those statements, I'm like, man, I'm not sure, because I see some women Democrats last night were saying their response was terrible. We don't want another committee here. We want something done.
Well, I mean, she is part of the gutless four. You know, if there was a button I could hit, not under my desk.
Is that a superhero movie?
Yeah, it should be. But if there's a button I could hit to get rid of McConnell and Ryan and Pelosi and Schumer and force both parties to start over, I'd do it today.
You know, there was a slightly off topic, but related to the sort of disgust with both leadership in both parties. There's an NBC poll that came out about among millennials that said 70% of millennials believe there should be a third party or independent candidates that are sort of disgusted with both parties. I mean, a little more on Republicans and Democrats, but both kind of like, why are these our only choices? And in an age when choices are limitless for this generation of kids, they're kind of like, why do I only have these two bad things to pick from in their minds?
If there is, it's a larger discussion. We won't have time to do it today. But if there is a celebrity with a certain amount of fame,
Mark Cuban,
that could run that type of yeah. person that could run as an independent, that mm-hmm. doesn't need to all the money to develop it, you could see that as a possibility. But you'd also like it not to be a reality show star.
Yeah, I mean, think if Ross Perot was maybe not so off the page.
He got 18%.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that, you know, if you're a self-funder and you have a message. And if you're somebody, I mean, look, half of leadership is saying what's on people's minds, but they just don't have the courage to say it. Mm-hmm. You've got somebody who isn't constrained by having to make everybody happy. I think it could be a really opportunity.
And I think we've talked about it here. In a sense, Trump did it, but he just did it under the cloak of the Republican Party. He took over the Republican.
That's what you hear, though, from the Trump people. He's just saying what I think, but I can't say.
Yeah.
I've heard that a million times since he started running.
Doesn't include everything he says.
But if you think about the 2016 election, the apparatus.
I try not to, because I called it all along. I told you Trump.
You did. You were right. How's that drink thing going?
It's not going
so
well.
But the apparatus of both national parties failed.
Yes.
They failed miserably, and Trump won. So in a sense, he didn't do it as a technical independent, but he took over both major parties.
Okay, let me ask you, but did the Democrats fail because they nominated Hillary?
I don't put it all.
I'm not banging
on her,
but she just.
I think there was a failure in trying to limit competition.
Yep.
I think there was a failure in trying to shut down the debate and sort of hand somebody the nomination. I just don't think that works.
Is it too early to announce Ronnie Woo Woo for president in 2020?
Gutierrez is in, right?
Yeah.
he's not running. It's 7:33. Back with Bridget Gaynor and Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. And yeah, we will discuss whether Donald Trump has gone down the cuckoo highway. Or maybe he already had a place there. Big story first when we come back on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're going to eliminate tax breaks and complex loopholes taken advantage of by the wealthy. Who are they? I think my accountants are going crazy right now. It's all right. Hey, look, I'm president. I don't care. I don't care anymore. I don't care. Some of my wealthy friends care. Me, I don't care. This is a higher calling. Do we agree? As Hillary said, what difference does it make? It made a difference. It made a big difference.
It's the good people of St. Charles, Missouri, who... It's not their fault. It's not their fault. When the President of the United States lies to your face, it's not their fault. You know where the truth ended there? He told the truth when he said, I don't care. When he tried to make I don't care legit by saying it's a higher calling, that's when the lies came back in. You described it great off the air a second ago. What'd you say the tax plan is for Trump?
Well, look, you look at this tax plan. The Wall Street Journal today says it's going to be bad for people. So I don't know what more we have to do. But I think members of Congress, especially in the Senate, are afraid if they don't hand him this thing that he wants, whether it's a pacifier or a rattle or something mm-hmm. to placate, then he's going to retaliate. And so even against their better judgment, we may see this thing go forward.
Do you, Pat, from what you've seen of the Senate plan and the House plan, do you see a bill that comes together that actually benefits people?
Yeah, I'm not as sour on it. Even the Wall Street Journal, I think that there are some things in here that are good. I think everybody needs to pay less tax if they can. I think if we can lower taxes on everybody, there's some things in here I don't like. But it's still some kind of plan and some kind of movement forward. And I don't agree that they're necessarily trying to pacify Trump. I think Trump's becoming increasingly irrelevant to Congress. They've got to get something done. I think they're more concerned with their constituents than they are with him, because I think a lot of people probably in the back of their minds with this storm clouds of this investigation going on, I'm not sure how long a lot of people think he's going to be around.
I know guys are worried about being primaried, but I've said this before on the air. You're saving your job for what? Because what's left of the country that you're going to represent if you continue to allow it to be destroyed from the top down?
Yeah, it's a good question, but I think people get there and they get Potomac fever and they like it and they like the trips in the summer and they like being a congressperson and it's something you don't want to give up. I think there are a lot of people that are true good public servants that do a good job and want to be there to do a good job for their constituents. But again, I've said it a million times, the problem in with our political system right now is gerrymandering. These districts are drawn to be so partisan, we don't get races where you get an actual Democrat runner versus a Republican. They're all done in the primaries, and that leads to the polarization I think you see in the Congress.
And look,
Hold on, Eric Edelstein.
This is Pat's exactly right. We should be having a serious debate. I know people sort of zone out when you're talking about tax policy, and it's more interesting to talk about sexual harassment and Matt Lauer, but this may be a major shift in this country, and these guys are ramming it. The Republicans are ramming it through Congress with no hearings, no discussion, and it's because it is a bad bill. Look, I agree with Pat. Everyone wants to pay less taxes.
And have a simpler process
to
do.
But the problem with this is not just paying. This is a massive shift. We're in a moment of unprecedented inequality in wealth. And this shifts it even further to the wealthy. The Congressional Budget Office study said by 2027, people making 40 to 50 grand are going to pay $5 billion more in taxes. And people who make over $1 million are going to pay $5 billion less. So what does that mean? They're passing a tax bill that basically pays for tax cuts for the wealthy by taking it out of the poor and the middle class.
In the CBO, everybody cites that, and the CBO is never right on anything. And as much as I love my Democrat friends, I hear this every time. Now the Democrats are concerned with deficits. You know, took the deficit from, or the debt from $10 trillion to $20 trillion in the Obama administration. We didn't hear a word about deficits. Now we're going to actually get some tax relief for middle class people. Not perfect. And now we're talking about deficits and this income inequality. I agree, we need to get some wage growth, but we need more jobs. And if we're going to have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, Bridget, you know better than anybody, we're not going to get jobs. It's the same stuff we deal here in Illinois. We need some growth, or we're not going to get wage growth.
We have one of the lowest unemployment rates right now. So you're going to look at what Eric just said about you're moving the tax burden from the wealthy to the middle class. You're doing the same thing on the corporate side. You're cutting the corporate rate, and you're getting rid of a ton of deductibles and other things that used to shelter the burden for small business. And so it's
that's the problem. That's Ron Johnson's problem with it and the pass through. They need to do it.
But that's not a perfect throughout bill. The bill. Yeah. So if you're moving from the wealthy to the middle class, and then you're also doing it on the business side. This is a theme which says if you've got power, you're going to get a good deal.
Yeah, but the wealthy, everybody's getting a tax cut here. Everybody's, but anytime there's a tax cut, the Democrats, all right, you're of course the wealthy are getting more of a break because they pay more.
But no, but it's permanent for the wealthy, and it expires for the middle class.
And that's part of the process, the reconciliation process, which they can correct. They have to do it that way to get it through. And I hate it.
Why don't I do it the other way?
Well,
why don't they have the rich
people's tax? It's so funny, when Obamacare went through with no Republican votes and it was rammed through, it was beautiful, it was the greatest day in the world, but when the Republicans do something to get something done, it's all bad.
I think that's called politics.
Months of hearings on all over this has been 2 weeks.
Obamacare, how it was done in the first, 4 months.
I'd be curious in Commissioner Gaynor's, as somebody who's works in corporate America, this notion that corporations getting a tax cut increases jobs or increases productivity. The economists, the analysts all say that's not what happens. Shareholders get it. Executives get it.
Right. It's such nonsense. Companies do what's good for the company. And if it's to invest in R&D, or if it's to hire people or pay more wages, that's what they do. And that's how the system works. Would you rather give the money to the government? Is the government a better determiner of where your tax dollars should go? Or would you rather trust corporate America and individuals?
No, but
that's my argument with
the
Democrats.
I'd rather have a balance between corporate America and small business. Do I want to take cuts away from small business and give it to corporate? No, I don't. This isn't about whether you hand it to the government or whether you keep it in your own pocket. This is who gets the distribution. And right now, it's the more powerful you are, the bigger share of the pie you're getting.
Senator Corker wants to put triggers in that says if the trickle-down doesn't work, then the bill either collapses on itself or it goes to a different level in stage two and stage three. Are you for that?
No, because I'm not sure if you can define trickle-down. I think that there are things that we could do for people like education and training that would add to people being able to make more money. I think part of the problem here in this country is we have a lot of jobs, but people don't have the skills to do them. And I think maybe it's too much in the weeds, but maybe more junior colleges so people can have jobs in the tech sector that they might not get that would allow them to be paid more. I think it's not as simple as just tax policy to fix this income inequality that we all agree on.
But one thing that takes it the other way, and one of the reasons they're ramming it through, are there are really poisonous provisions. For example, right now you take a student loan for college, you can deduct the interest on your taxes. They're going to take that out to pay for corporate tax breaks, to say that kids who can't afford college and have to take loans, you can no longer write off interest.
Here's a bigger problem. Nobody can afford college anymore. I've got four kids in college.
Private colleges should be hammered for the money they're stealing.
Well, how about the public colleges? How about the University of Illinois? It's $30,000 to go to U of I.
No, I understand that.
Ridiculous. Federal policy make it even more expensive for the middle class to be able to afford college.
No, but the point is people have to borrow because it's too expensive to go to college. When you and I went, or at least when I went, we paid as we went.
One of the first things
But my point is it's not as simple as tax policy.
No, it's not as simple as tax policy. But the more you butt this, butt that it, you make it bigger and more complicated. If you go with the basic premise of how to make it more fair for everybody, sunsetting the corporate tax thing would seem to make sense and still be able to fit in the math under the reconciliation plan.
I also think that, you know, in some ways, the Republicans may be hoisted on their own petard on this. I mean, I think...
Well, you don't want to be hoisted on your petard. No, I can tell you
that. Your petard really hurts. Because the fact of the matter is they need a win. They're in charge of everything. They've done nothing. They're heading into these what could be disastrous midterms. If they think they're going to ride, you know, this stallion of this tax plan to victory in the fall, I think it hands Democrats, says these guys have done nothing except hand more money to the wealthy, take money, more money from the middle class. I think it's going to be like the Ryan budget 2.0, which really killed a lot of congressional campaigns.
Well, I can tell you right now, the Democrats are being handed politics and are fumbling more often than Chicago Bears on a bad Sunday. What are the Democrats going to ever get their act together and go, thank you, Mr. Trump. Thank you, Mitch McConnell. I mean, who's going to get their stuff together with Democrats?
I think this is where you see all these new candidates coming forward, because I think you have a bunch of people who are from outside politics who are saying this is nuts. I mean, the thing you mentioned earlier, which is you get into politics and then people want to stay no matter what it takes. And, you know, politics is like dating. When you want it so bad you're willing to do anything, you make a bunch of bad choices.
He'll change for me.
He'll change for me. It'll end up okay.
Washington will change for me.
Right. And so, you know, I think you're getting a lot of people from the outside who say, I don't care if I want to win, but this is nuts and I'm going to try to change it. And I think you're going to see a huge wave. So you've got a wave of women around sexual harassment, and then you're going to look at this tax bill. And I think Eric's exactly right. Once people really start to understand what's in it, I mean, the fact that you make the corporate tax cuts permanent, but the people tax cuts expire and you have to fight for them again.
If they actually expire.
No, it's in there.
I know, but if they actually, do you think they're going to let them expire
and concede
that argument?
What you're doing is you're saying, oh, I believe that they're going to be so popular that Congress can't possibly unwind them. Well, Eric's point.
Well, and it's
then
kicking
the
can down the road. Make somebody else take the tough decision.
Listen, we're taking time away from talking about the fact that the guy in the White House is cuckoo nuts. So we got to come back and at least hit that for a second before we run out of time. Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, Bridget Gaynor, and more in a moment on 720 WGN. It is Bridget Gaynor, Pat Brady, and Eric Edelstein here, and we've only got a couple of minutes to handle this. But yesterday, the President of the United States retweeted videos showing fake or real violence against Muslims. And then when the head of our number one ally, Theresa May, the Prime Minister, called him out on it, he tweeted back to her, but tweeted the wrong Theresa May. This is all part of a week that's gone so far off the rails, it's unbelievable. How long can people sit around? This is not an incurable problem. We're not talking about finding a cure for cancer here. We're talking about someone in the White House who is unbelievably dangerous and unbelievably incompetent. So is anybody in Washington going to step up and deal with this? Any of you have any ideas?
You know what? I said all along, when everything is an outrage, nothing's outrageous. And that's just what I think here. Everything... What any other president that in my lifetime that would have done those two stupid things in one day, there'd be a hearing tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But with this guy, it's just par for the course. And I still think the most powerful person in the country right now is Bob Mueller, because that investigation is gaining a lot of steam right now.
Yeah, and Jared Kushner went back to talk to them yesterday.
I mean, the tipping point, I've said this before, will be when Republicans, federal Republicans in the Senate particularly, who are on the ballot, come out against him. We have not had one prominent Republican who's not up for election or re-election stand up to Trump. And as soon as that happens, I think it's a tipping point, and then it's all downhill for him.
Even the ones that are retiring, you know, Flake made a comment, you know, a speech when he was leaving, but you'd think these guys are not running again. They are Corker and he, and why they wouldn't be taking the leadership moment right now to kind of be the tip of the spear and push back. I mean, look, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins played that offensive role in the healthcare bill. Nobody is doing this on the tax bill. And that is, you know, to your point, what are you saving all this political capital for?
Right.
You know, it's a muscle. It's not a bank account. You got to use it.
But I think every day you wake up in Washington as a representative, it should be a 911 alarm going off in your head that, yes, he's still the president of the United States. And you don't get to go come 6 months from now after a war has started and thousands of South Koreans have died and American soldiers have died and North Korean civilians have died and go, yeah, I knew it. I just couldn't do anything about it. Or, wow, turns out you were right. Nobody who's screaming about Trump is looking to be right. They're looking to take care of the country when nobody else is doing it.
When I think about Trump, I mean, the thing that gives me the greatest pause from all this stuff, because I think, to Pat's point, you have this kind of drama show that happens, and it's hard to figure out what really matters and what doesn't. But, you know, I think my son is going to register for the draft while this man is president.
Mm-hmm. My son's going into ROTC.
ROTC. Are you kidding me? Like, that is the type of thing that keeps me up at night, because I think all of a sudden you can roll your eyes and think this is crazy and do all this stuff, and then all of a sudden it's your child. I mean, it is.
There's a kid that grew up with my son who was a great kid who I coached, who was stationed in South Korea right now as a member of the Navy.
I mean, it's the old line. It would be funny if it weren't so scary.
Mm-hmm. And to me, it's the damage that we're not talking about that's being done that we're going to find out 10 years from now on the international scene. Yeah. That, to me, is the scariest thing. The domestic stuff we can handle, but I don't know what's going on in the rest of the world.
Right. We're abdicating. We have been the defender of people's human rights across the world, and you can say that that's our job or you can say that's not our job, but that has been our mission, and we're absolutely abdicating any ability to be that person for the rest of the world.
And there's a vacuum, and that's bad.
Yeah.
Because people get in that, fill that vacuum that we don't want there.
Yeah, I bring it full circle. When the other Clinton left the White House, we had a balanced budget. He had a lot of distractions. All self-created. Here's the thing. This is why in 2018, we want you more than ever to get involved in the process, because bitching isn't enough. And talk radio and talk TV and just having conversations about it isn't enough. Start thinking about primary day, kids. Mm-hmm. We're going to be pushing you hard to vote. We're going to help you figure out the research. We're going to help you do your part to try to change things. It's nice to see all of you. Bridget,
good
thank
to
you.
See you too. Thank you.
Cook County Board. Pat Brady, thank you. Eric Edelstein, thank you. We'll see you guys next week, or are you not coming back?
This is a comedy show, right?
We'll be back 8:02. News Next 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Let's all sing. Yeah, come on, kids in the back. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good. Live from Channel 9, Dean Richards. Good morning, Dean.
He's singing. I told him to sing.
You think he had to run out for something? Maybe run a few errands? The way this works is we're at the Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. Dean's at Channel 9. And so we don't have a monitor where we can see Dean sitting. His microphone and technical setup is at Channel 9 in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. And he sits at his desk in the newsroom, and he's always ready to go. Always ready to go.
I told you he was singing.
Oh. Some fan talking to you in the hallway, or what?
I've been talking to you for the last 5 minutes.
You lie, you lie, you lie.
Something was not set up on your end.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I've been right here. Seriously.
They set this up. Here's how they set this up. They set this up where I only have to push one button because they know what an idiot I am.
Something wasn't set up in your in the master okay. control area.
All right, Donald Trump. all right, let me take a look at what we have coming up today.
Take a look at the big rundown, Steve.
That I'm a little surprised about one of these items.
Let me see if I can guess which one, because there are many that I sent.
The Jay-Z.
The Jay-Z story. Jay-Z talks about his infidelity?
Yes.
Oh, who isn't talking about that?
Well, here's
inappropriate here's things these days.
Well, Beyonce's sister,
Solange,
punched Jay-Z in an elevator.
Beat him up in an elevator.
Right. Yep. And there was a rumor forever it was because she was defending her sister because Jay-Z fooled around. Is that what happened?
Apparently that is what happened.
He
did not give specific details about exactly what happened in the infidelity, but he did acknowledge that he was unfaithful. To Beyonce, you know, and who wouldn't when you're married to a woman who looks like that? Who wouldn't stray, really? He said.
Plus, sponging off him, it's not like she has her own money.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, you can you know totally understand. He said that therapy and their music helped them to stay together. So they realized that there was a problem. They addressed it in therapy. They are both very musical people, and that's what they. you know, that's how they processed their emotional, whatever it was that they were going through. The thing that I found most interesting, this is all in a New York Times interview. Jay-Z said that the hardest thing is seeing pain on someone's face that you caused.
Yeah.
And then having to deal with yourself.
I'd agree with that.
After that.
I would completely agree with that.
Both his album and her album, both of their most recent albums, dealt with the infidelity, and he said that hearing those tracks was very, very uncomfortable. So, you know, they apparently worked it out. And,
they have kids. Processing. They've got little blue ivy and green ivy and red ivy and all the kids.
Right, poison ivy.
Poison ivy, yeah.
Yeah, poison ivy. That's a very revealing story. Jay-Z, maybe you want to talk to him about it. He's going to be in Chicago next Tuesday. He's going to be at the United Center.
He normally swings by when he comes in.
Yeah. Ironically, the same day that Barry Manilow is going to be in Chicago.
Which one's the guy that's saying Feelings? Oh, that's Morris Albert, sorry.
Nothing more than Feelings. I'm hoping that they show up at each other's concerts and do a little celebrity mashup.
It'd be great if Jay-Z brought out Barry Manilow. Give me some noise for Barry Manilow!
I write the songs that make the whole world chuka-chuka-chuka-chuka sing.
We're just two ships. Two ships that pass in the night.
And I would sing a Jay-Z song if I knew any of them.
How happy you made me. Well, you came and you gave without taking.
I know all the words.
But I sent you away, oh, Mandy.
Am I even close to the right key? I can't tell.
Sounds good.
Not bad.
You were a songbird
and
today.
And I need you today, oh, Mandy.
Yesterday we talked with Mr. Manilow on the phone.
Yeah, what'd he say?
He's coming. Well, you know, he was promoting his a very Barry Christmas. I'm going to play back that interview on my Sunday show this week.
Did he talk about how he walked away when love was his?
He did.
Yeah?
He did.
He got caught up in a world.
He mentioned that
with
he
uphill climbing.
Can't smile without you.
Were his tears in his eyes at that point?
Oh, brother.
Nothing was rhyming.
You're scaring me. Somebody.
Do you know who Tony Kornheiser is?
Excuse me?
Tony Kornheiser. You ever heard of him?
Tony Kornheiser.
Tony Kornheiser is a famous ESPN guy and a very famous sports writer for the Washington Post for many, many, many years. And now on TV for the last many years and does a funny podcast as well. It tells a very funny story. He wrote the culture column for the Washington Post for many years. Mm-hmm. And one of his assignments was to interview Barry Manilow at the height of his popularity back in the 70s. And he thought it had gone really well, and Barry Manilow invited him to the concert. Well, the story broke the morning of the concert. And apparently Barry didn't like what he saw in what Tony Kornheiser wrote. So Tony Kornheiser shows up at the Barry Manilow concert. He's summoned back to the dressing room. Mm-mm. Where Barry Manilow's manager tells him, Barry's really mad and won't see you. And according to Tony, doesn't give him an explanation of why he won't see you, but he said he won't talk to you. And Barry Manilow came out and told him to get out. And he said, my team will drive you to the end of the state. Get out. He was being kicked out of Maryland.
Wow.
They were in Maryland in Landover where the concert was. And Barry Manilow's thugs were going to kick Tony Kornheiser out of the state of Maryland.
But I sent you away,
oh, Mandy.
Oh, Mandy. Will you kiss
you kissed me. You stopped me from shaking. And I need you today.
Dean, Steve's getting a little weepy here.
Understand.
Oh, why couldn't he?
One of the things that we talked with Barry about yesterday.
Yesterday being a dream?
Yesterday being a dream. We talked about that Family Guy episode where all the guys on Family Guy are sitting around the bar talking about how they hate Barry Manilow, and then one by one they start admitting how much they like Barry Manilow songs and wind up going to the Barry Manilow concert where Barry himself sings "O Quagmire."
Right.
He's
got a great sense of humor. He's a funny dude.
Yeah, he does have a great sense of humor. So Sunday, if you're a Fanilow, we're going to play back that Barry Manilow interview, and we've got...
I'm sorry, did you just call them Fanilows?
Well, that's what the super Barry Manilow fans are called, Fanilows.
That's ridiculous.
That's what they're called, Steve, like you don't know that, president of the regional fan club. I've got some Barry Manilow swag that he sent me, some Barry Manilow Christmas ornaments and Santa stockings and all kinds of Barry Manilow holiday stuff to give away.
I think the Fanta thing's ridiculous, and I can't go anyway because I have my Swiftie meeting.
What's a Swiftie meeting?
Taylor Swift.
Oh, so,
yeah. You know, all of us.
I thought it wasn't the thing that you use to clean the dust off the floor.
No, that's a Swiffer. Oh,
I know you're a big fan of that. I didn't know that there was a fan club for it.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk about Hamilton. We'll talk about, we'll actually give something away for this. You know what? I have Carol Burnett tickets. Oh. If you could tell me which celebrity, and this will give you a chance to Google it and cheat, which celebrity has the most followers on Instagram, we'll take the first correct caller at 312-981-7200, and you'll win Carol Burnett tickets. And by the way, it's not Carol Burnett.
Is it the show in June?
Yeah, exactly.
At the Chicago Theater.
Yeah, the tickets go on sale tomorrow. And then a couple of cool pieces of audio, too, when we come back. More with Dean in a moment. First,
be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard.
Texter Dean says, damn it, Cochran. Now I had to go listen to the whole Mandy song. There you go.
I enjoy a little weekend in New England myself.
I'm just, you know, it's another hot Barry Manilow record, Even Now.
Even Now is a good one.
Even Now.
Do you like Copacabana?
Who doesn't like Copacabana? You know what I like to do? I like to dress like I'm actually at the Copacabana and then dance around by myself.
Right.
Oh, you do that too?
Okay. I do the part of Rico. I know you're Tony.
Yeah, you want me to dress up like Lola and be the showgirl.
That was 30 years ago when you used to have a show. That is sick how we know the lyrics.
It just sticks to your head.
Wow.
More Hamilton tickets on sale?
A new block of tickets going on sale December the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
This will be an 18-week block of tickets. It will take performances now through September of 2018.
Cool.
Maximum of 12 tickets per household when you purchase. They'll be $75 to $195. You can purchase at the box office, BroadwayInChicago.com, or their ticket line, which is 1-800-775-2000.
For Carol Burnett tickets, who has the most followers on Instagram? Did we get a winner yet? We still don't have a winner? Okay. Well, you can't reveal it yet. We have to get a winner before we actually can reveal the answer.
Are people calling in asking what's Instagram?
No. We are a big Instagram, Snapchat kind of audience here. 312-981-7200. Yes. MySpace, Friendster. We got them all here.
Prodigy.
CompuServe.
Yep.
New Christmas songs out from Jane Lynch and Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke, 91-year-old Dick Van Dyke, got together with Chicago's very own Jane Lynch, and they did a Christmas song together. It's on my Facebook page. It's on YouTube.
It's not Baby, It's Cold Outside, is it?
It's not Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Goodness.
It's an original song called Christmas Caroling. It's adorable. They are adorable, singing and dancing. You'll have to obviously go to the web to see the dancing, but check out Dick Van Dyke and Jane Lynch.
Gotta get my winter jacket. Gotta let sleigh bells ring. We're gonna go out and spread some cheer. We're going caroling. We're gonna meet on the corner. Ring the doors, ding dong, ding dong. We're gonna get the neighbors singing along.
That's great.
How
good does he sound?
That's cute.
He sounds great. Jane Lynch, is there kind of his backup for him. But he's doing Soft Shoe during this part of the video.
Of course he is.
He's dancing.
What 93-year-old doesn't?
Oh, he's just amazing.
He really is.
This one is going to be destined to be a Christmas classic, as is this next brand new holiday song. From rapper DMX.
All right, now we're talking the music of my people.
This
hit
is
it.
The music of your people. First of all,
I can't
welcome.
Hear Dick Van Dyke in that one.
You're welcome, is all I can say for this. Back in 2012, DMX was doing a radio show, and he did an a cappella version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
I bet it was way different than this one.
Well, no, actually, it was pretty much the same.
Yeah, of course it was.
But it went viral. It went crazy viral. So This year, he went back into the studio, did a full produced version with orchestra and, you know, everything.
That really fixed it.
And that's the version that you just hear. So I am personally going to walk over a copy of this over to Light FM myself today.
Yeah, because they're playing nothing but Christmas music. They're going
to
want it.
I want them to play that like every 2 hours, like they're playing every other Christmas song. Right.
Let me go to Barb here. Barb, who has the most followers on Instagram?
Selena Gomez.
Congratulations. Am I right, Dean? I think I am.
She is exactly correct. It's amazing how you knew that right off the top of your head without cheating.
I'm just curious. Did you Google it, or were you guessing?
I actually, the news this morning, 6 o'clock, was when the WGN I watched.
Oh, well, there you go.
I wonder who did that story earlier this morning.
Research. Yeah. Well, that's not cheating if you get the answer from Dean.
130 million followers, by the way, on
and Instagram?
On the Instagram.
Yeah. And I'm second. That's what's weird.
Well, actually, it's soccer star Cristiano Ronaldo is second. Ariana Grande, Beyonce, Kim Kardashian West. But way down on the list at 5,432,000
is me.
That would be Steve.
Yes. Chicago Theater, June 12th. Carol Burnett, tickets on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com or by phone at thechicagotheater.com. And we'll talk to you tomorrow from Hortons.
Carol Burnett has a 50th anniversary special on Sunday, by the way.
Oh, good plug. Yeah, CBS. Forgot about that. Oh, and thank you, CBS, for the Bruno Mars concert last night, live from the Apollo. That was cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
We'll come back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. Pictures of Lilith
made my life so wonderful. Coach Q, sponsored by Hooters. The original wing joint. By the way, thank you, Chicago Blackhawks, as we welcome Coach Q. Coach, I don't even know if you're aware, but last night was the annual event where WGN family and friends come out and skate on the ice, and everybody apparently had a great time.
Oh, it's a great, it's got to be great out there skating around in that facility, you know, and you're looking around and you think of when you fill the building up with 20,000 fans, how special it can be as well. So it's great for everybody, and I'm sure everybody had a good time.
Yeah, I was going to go, but I didn't want to show everybody up. You know, coaches, you know, I'm famous for my triple camel.
Is it because of your speed that you have?
My speed, my agility.
Your finesse, yeah.
Speed, agility, finesse, my ability to cut very quickly. But my triple camel, which I'm famous for, where I bring three camels out on the ice and I jump all three camels. And you guys don't like having camels on the ice. It's no damn good.
No. You don't want it. It's too slow. Camels are too slow.
Dave, say hi to Coach Q.
Coach, good morning. And I was out there last night. It was a great night. It was a lot of fun. So thanks to the Blackhawks for that. So this will be the third game of 5 and 7 nights for you. I know that you have to give guys rest and make sure they're getting enough rest when you're going through a stretch like this. How do you kind of balance the need to get some work in and at the same time know that you have such a heavy dose of games in a short time?
Well, we'll try to keep practices to a minimum. I know that we'll have a morning skate today. We'll have a morning skate Saturday. In between game days, not likely skating this week. But 5 and 7 is very unusual, and I think we want to make sure we're going to be maxing out in the games. And you know, in games, you try to get a little balance in delegating your ice time and 4 lines and 60 and 3 pairs rolling on the front and the back, and then trying to get a little bit more closer ice time across the board. But once you're in that game, though, you play some guys a little bit more, and you know, we're coming off a real competitive game in Nashville the other night. Back-to-back game, and but again, day rest yesterday and morning skate today, we should be fine tonight.
Is there anything about Nashville that's particularly a pain in the behind to match up against or play against? Because they certainly seem to rise to the occasion whenever they're playing the Hawks.
Well, they're the hottest team in the league right now, and they're arguably as good as anybody. They've added to a really good lineup last year. Picked up Turris. You know, they still don't have Ellis on the back end, but they got a great balance of speed and skill up front to a very mobile and really solid defense and Rennie and Nett. So they're well rounded in all aspects of their game. They've really improved over the last few years, and we've had three close games with them. I thought we've progressed since we played them in the playoffs, but I still think we got to be neater with the puck, and you got to be. There's no odd or off shifts against that team because it's they keep coming and they can attack, and but they're a dangerous team as good as there is in the league.
You pretty happy with the way Forsberg played for you?
Yeah, he was. He was good. We gave up some quality chances against and still kept us in the game. Did everything he could. You know, they had some good looks right down the gut, be it off the rush or in zone, and he was square and solid and did what he had to do. So he's played good in all the games. You know, maybe Colorado ordinary, but for the most part, we've been pleased with him.
What about the captain's game? He's not showing up on the score sheet as much as he'd like or as much as we probably all would like, but what do you see in there that we ought to be focused on?
Well, I thought he had a great game in Florida. Him and Sauter were really good in that game, and mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as a group, some nights, you know, you'd look for at least production or, I say, scoring chances. Their last game, they didn't do as well in that department. But for the most part, a lot of nights they're out-chancing and controlling the puck and have more zone time than who they're out there against. And that's what Johnny's good at, and sometimes they go in. But I think as a line, they should be a little bit more productive in the cashing in because they've got three guys that are around the net that can all make plays and finish as well. So that's what we'd look for from that group.
Obviously, DeBrincat's game on Monday night got everybody really excited. And then, of course, you've told us before about his progress and what you've seen from him. How much upside is there for this kid?
I'm going to say a lot of upside because it's a, you know, I think guys that make plays and see plays the way he does on a shift-to-shift basis, a lot of things can happen in the course of a game. And in the first goal of last game, makes a tremendous play, you know, beats a guy to the puck, protects it, passes through five guys to Tommy off the bench, and it's in the net. You know, plays like that, you know, some guys wouldn't even be able to touch the puck the first time. He keeps it and has that play recognition. And so I'm going to say high end upside. And, you know, I think he's going to be one guy that's always going to find a way to score and produce and really contribute to your team. And I think he's not going to be a hindrance because he plays on both sides of the puck, which is a great attribute.
How's his coachability? Pretty good?
I think he's one of those guys you can put him in all situations and adapts to it extremely well. High-end IQ and anticipation, which is good to see because, you know, we stay out of the way of the offensive side of things, and he's grasped how to play with structure, which is, you know, that's what you couldn't ask for anything more.
He's little, he's quick, but he seems to know exactly where to be on the ice. And as a maturity for his game, you wouldn't expect at 19 years old. Do you want him to beef up? Is that a goal?
No, I don't think you want to. You want to make sure that quickness and agility and speed are got you to the game here. And, you know, as you get a little bit older, you get a little bit stronger. But you want to be careful that you don't get too big. And you want to make sure that you play to your strengths and try to enhance those areas that made you effective getting here and sustaining it. It'll be, you know, to me, that's a work in progress is, you know, whether you're getting stronger when in face-offs or in puck areas and pushing guys off and then around the puck area. But he's those little things that he's had throughout his career, the intangibles of finding ways to get the puck, you know, you want to be careful. You don't want to get too big.
You know, we know last year that Kaner took Panarin under his wing. They worked out together and fed off each other game-wise. Is anybody hanging out with the kid with the DeBrinket of, you know, of the older guys? You got a bunch of young guys on this team, but is anybody?
I'm going to say he's, you know, he's playing with Hartsey and Sharpie now, and I think that whether it's his line mates, I think he's, you know, and he's got a different group when he's out there on the power play. He sees just about everybody in the course of a game on the ice, so it's like, you know, I think he fits in very well with his teammates, very likable young hockey player, and you know, I think he's fit in well with his teammates. So right now I can't say it's one, but I think he's you know, I think a lot of guys you know, don't mind spending time around him or with him.
First look tonight at Dallas, and you could see him I think three times in the next couple of weeks. They've been heating up a little bit lately. What are your thoughts on the Stars?
Extremely solid team, always well played, technically a strong team game, balanced to their lineup. They look like they're everybody in our division's kind of in that same spot. Well, we got the toughest division, and we know that these 2 points tonight are 4 points. It's a 4-point game, and then Saturday we'll say the same thing, and right before Christmas we'll say it again. But we're you know, they're a team that can win, and they can be as good as anybody in our division or the league. They have that ability. I'm not seeing them all this year at all, but that's we're going to see a tough game to play. They're going to be happy to check tonight, and so expect a hard game. And we say that to almost everybody in our division or conference.
Hawks tonight here, then Dallas, and then L.A. as the string continues. You like having a bunch of games together like this?
5-7 is very unusual. So
it's kind of a balance off the circus trip not existing anymore, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, it's we had 2 weeks in a row with you know, a Wednesday and a Saturday and a Wednesday and a Saturday. So there's a lot of time in between there, and this week we're playing catch up a little bit.
Yeah, it's a lot of games. Have you done any Christmas shopping yet?
No.
Okay. Do you want anything in particular I could run out and get for you?
I haven't even thought about it yet. It's a little too early.
All right. Well, you text me and let me know.
Get that hat on there pretty soon.
I know you're a big text guy. You text me and let me know.
All right.
Coach, good luck. Well, I've heard some people go on, these Blackhawks are going to break out any minute now. We're not even a third through the season yet. And it just feels like any moment now you're going to rip off 8 out of 10 or 10 out of 12, and then you're off to the races in a very difficult division, difficult conference. But let the fun continue tonight against Dallas. Appreciate your time.
All right, guys.
See ya.
Thanks.
That's Coach Joel Quenneville. What do you think Quenneville wants for Christmas?
He should be in our Secret Santa.
You think?
I think so. Yeah. But I don't think we should ask him to buy anybody anything.
No, we just,
I think
get,
we
him
just
stuff.
Get him something.
You know what we get if we got him? Remember Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
Yeah, perfect.
Wouldn't that be good?
I loved Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, let's go, Coach, you and me. Mary's back.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:15 now, and you can follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show, and I hope you will, and I hope you come out and see us tomorrow at Hortons in LaGrange for the Allstate Hometown Voices Tour. It's facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. My friend Ann Johnsos, former producer of this program, told us about somebody that I want you to meet now. It's a very sad but a very cool story as well, and Chris Parrish is here by day. He fights crime as a professor of scriptwriting?
Screenwriting, yeah.
And where do you do that?
At Paul University, best film school in the Midwest.
Yes, and that has to be nothing but fun, because you see these kids with stars in their eyes who have great ideas, and you're teaching them how to write a script.
Yeah, really talented people. Every year there's somebody that is going off very, very quickly to success. DePaul's only been around for about 10 years, and we've really grown exponentially, and just an amazing faculty. Dean David Miller is our head honcho. He's incredible, and our assistant Dean Joanne Zielinski and the head of our department, Gary Novak, are just the greatest people that you could work with.
And do you teach them patience and perseverance? And do you tell them after you write 6, the 7th one is your number?
Well, that's a good number if it's only 6. For me, it took 7 years before I started making a living at it when I moved to L.A.
How about that?
Yeah, it was a while. But I broke into my the screenplay that I sold that got me an agent and got me working was, I think I can say this on the air.
We'll find out, won't we?
We'll find out. It was called Sidney Crawford Wants to Bone Me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Fun family film.
Yeah.
And that kind of opened the door for me in terms of features and TV. I was a consultant on Curb Your Enthusiasm, wrote on King of Queens, and mostly worked in comedy.
The story of your son is what we're going to take on here in just a second in a movie that was your son's idea.
Yes.
That you're going to be able to see. And we certainly hope it's enough fun that people see it everywhere because it's going to raise a lot of money. Let's do that when we come back. Before we do that, let me grab this and make a listener happy. Let's see. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Debbie, you want to go see Carole King?
Oh, my God, I do.
Let's sing together, Debbie. I feel the earth move
under my feet.
Nicely done.
Sky.
Beautiful, the Carole King musical.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
Well done. Well done, Debbie. Now stop. It's at the Cadillac Palace Theater, December 5th through January 28th, Broadway in Chicago.com for tickets. Who will you take with you?
Oh, I will be taking my daughter with me.
Oh, that's great. That's great. God bless. Hold the line, please, and we'll get all her information. Pride of Hoffman Estates. Here's the story of Mason and the story of Thrill Ride next. First at 9:18, a quick break, and we're back at 7:20 WGN. Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. Chris Parrish is here, and you DePaul students should be listening so you know they can suck up a little and get back to school.
Sure.
We've only been we've only met a few minutes ago and talking, but you've just got a great aura about you. And considering what you and your wife have been through, I love this story of Thrill Ride.
Yeah.
And what you're doing for your late son, Mason. So let's back this up a little bit. How old was Mason when he passed?
Mason was 10 when he passed away.
And what was the condition?
He had an inoperable brain tumor called DIPG, diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma, a very rare type of brain cancer, which gets virtually nothing in terms of funding.
Do we know anything more about pediatric brain tumors than we did 5 years ago? It seems like, I don't know if it's research dollars, it just seems like it's awfully slow.
It's incredibly slow. Worse than 5 years ago, we know very little, up until recently, like very little progress in the past 30 years had been done. And so groups of parents who suffer the loss of children have, unfortunately, slowly and steadily been organizing and raising funds to research DIPG because, childhood cancer in general gets very little funding, and pediatric brain tumor research gets a pittance of that.
Any politicians working on behalf of changing that?
None that I know of.
Because that would help.
Yeah, big time.
How do you? So he's 10 years old, and he was nothing but fun from everything you've described.
Incredible.
How do you put one foot in front of the other and get on with things and get to a point now where you're taking an idea he had? Do I remember this right? This is an idea on the way to school?
I was driving him to school. This was about a year before he fell ill. And Mason was this naturally gifted storyteller.
With the perfect kid imagination, right?
With the perfect kid imagination, yeah. And all of his stories had kid protagonists. All of his ideas were very indicative of like mid-80s live-action Spielberg movies. And so...
So was every ride to school like a pitch meeting?
Pretty much. Every ride to school, every day after school, he was constant ideas. When he passed away, he left a stack of notebooks of his stories and cartoons and everything.
What a gift.
Which Thrill Ride is based on. So... I was driving him to school, and we had just seen Night at the Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Dad, I like the movie, but why did they make Ben Stiller the main character? They should have made it about his son. I'm like, yeah, that would have been really good for a family film.
Sense, yeah.
And he said, and Dad, museums are boring. Why didn't they set it at like an amusement park? And I'm like, oh my! I got to pull over and write this down.
Right. And that brief conversation turns into longer conversations, which turn into obviously a longer project, which culminates tomorrow night in a premiere.
Into the premiere of Thrill Ride. Mason's idea for his movie is hitting the big screen.
What a thrill.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And it was a long time in the process. It took over 3 years to get this thing from start to finish. And it's because it's an independent, you know, low-budget movie with 400 special effects in it.
How about that? And your wife produces?
Yeah, Lisa's one of the co-producers. Angie Gaffney, who's also a DePaul alumni, is our main producer, incredibly talented person.
So give me the story.
When Mason passed, Lisa and I wanted to... The plot of this...
Yeah, plot of the movie. And, yeah.
It's Goonies meets Night at the Museum. It's okay. About a group of kids that have snuck into an amusement park where legend has it Al Capone has hidden his loot.
If Geraldo only knew, he wouldn't have had to go into the vault. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's kind of based on that. We sort of have a little spoof of that.
Sure.
So the backstory is Tim Kazurinsky plays this architect.
Our friend.
A wonderful guy.
Couldn't be better. And a great writer, by the way.
Incredibly talented writer.
Yeah.
And so it opens up the 1930s where Tim is this out-of-work architect who is grabbed by Al Capone to build this amusement park with a hidden ride that will lead to Capone's loot, because Capone knows he's about to go to jail. The thing is, the ride is riddled with all types of deadly booby traps and things.
Sure.
And so Capone goes to jail, and 80 years pass, and so the backstory of this just becomes kind of an urban legend. Until Henry, this 10-year-old boy, my son's name was Mason Henry, so Henry, played by Lucas Jade Zuman, who is just an incredible young actor. He co-starred with Elle Fanning and Annette Bening last year in 20th Century Women, stars in the movie, finds the blueprints, the lost blueprints that Tim Kazurinsky created for this ride. And so the kids go on this adventure to find Capone's loot. And while they're exploring in the abandoned amusement park, the attractions come to life.
Thus the special effects kids.
Yes, big time.
Were you able to do the special effects in town?
A good portion of them
were.
Yeah, we kind of, to save money... We utilized a lot of talent from DePaul. We also utilized talent from Tribeca Flashpoint.
Sure.
Their special effects students turned Thrill Ride into a year-long project that they earned school credit from.
Flashpoint's a great school for kids who know what they want to do as far as getting into a business quicker than taking gen ed courses they don't need and wasting their parents' money at college.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just want to just mention this one guy. I swear to Steve, he's the next James Cameron.
Oh, really?
His name is Tommy Kraft, and he did a ton of the special effects single-handed from his dad's basement. And
how cool is that?
It's amazing. Like, there's this sequence. I guess I'm not giving away too much, but there's this underground sequence. The kids find the ride, and it's basically like the mine car scene in Temple of Doom.
Sure.
And Tommy created all the effects for that sequence. It's just amazing what this guy can do with software that you can literally buy off the shelf.
The cool thing, too, about this story is you're going to do this in your hometown, where you grew up with one Ann Johnsos.
Yeah, that's right.
In Woodstock, at the Classic Cinemas Woodstock. Where is that in particular?
Classic Cinemas right off the square. The Johnson family, who owns Classic, have been huge supporters of independent film.
And they're doing it at their other theaters as well?
Yeah, it's opening. We're having our sneak preview tonight in Woodstock, but okay. It's also going to be playing at the Ogden 6 in Naperville and in Elk Grove Village.
That's tremendous.
And it's also available now on Amazon and iTunes.
Oh, so you can get it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm writing that down. It's called Thrill Ride. The foundation will benefit from a very large chunk of the profits and some bills that have to be paid going forward. But the foundation itself while it may be fairly new, is crucial to helping create some funds to fight this scourge, this cancer that took your son. Did you and your wife get on the same page pretty quickly on this? We have to finish his dream?
Yeah, we did. We wanted to come up with some way to honor his memory. And we figured, you know, there's been like a lot of charity concerts, but
sure,
no one's ever done a charity movie. So we, through my dad, Ron Parrish, I met this incredible local philanthropist, Vince Foglia, mm-hmm. who's donated just such a huge amounts of money to local colleges and hospitals and built YMCAs. And so I pitched him this idea that I want to make this this movie based on my son's idea, where we would have 50% of the profits go towards DIPG research and provide handicapped accessible vans for families with kids that are dealing with catastrophic illnesses.
Sure.
Then we take the other 50%, we put it into the next movie, and we just keep doing rolling the process.
Rolling it forward.
Yeah, keep funding the charity. So Mr. Foglia listened to my idea for about 30 seconds, and he said, "I'm in. How much do you need?"
Wow.
So
how great is that?
I wasn't sure if angels existed.
Sure.
But
and one of
Foglia
them is your
does.
Son.
One of them is definitely Mason.
Yeah. Well, it's a great story, and I really hope people get out and see it, because the great thing about Thrill Ride is if it catches fire and then you end up at a couple of festivals, who knows what's possible in 2018 and beyond?
We've been in 10 different festivals so far.
It's got some buzz, I hope?
Yeah. We won Best Sci-Fi Feature, Sci-Fi Fantasy in Burbank, Best Feature at Gen Con.
Cool.
Best Family Film in Buffalo. It's doing the rounds.
That's exciting.
Yeah. All and, from Mason's idea.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know, as I always say, when I meet parents who've gone through the nightmare you guys have gone through, to be able to dive back in and to serve the memory of your child the way you have, it's beyond a hero thing. And I hope you're very proud of yourselves, because you and your wife should be.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah. And thanks for being here. By the way, if you give us the link for the foundation, we'll put it up across our social media platforms and at WGNradio.com so people can jump on there as well.
Absolutely. And if people want to check out ThrillRideTheFilm.com, they can learn all about the movie, and there's a link to the Mason Parrish Foundation.
ThrillRideTheFilm.com. It's just that easy.
Yep.
Good to meet you.
You too.
Thanks. And keep an eye on Aunt Janso's for us.
Okay, will do.
9:34, more in a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Orion Samuelson rejoins us.
Good morning,
sir. Hey, did I ask you yet to be a part of our New Year's Eve show with one of your classic Ole and Lena stories?
No, you haven't, but I have maybe two or three new ones. So
excellent, excellent.
I'm available.
I think we'd like to put you on video.
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah, because I think New Year's, aren't you out in Arizona for New Year's?
Yeah, we're, as a matter of fact, I'm talking to you from Arizona right now. And yeah, we will be here. For the first time in about 5 years, I'm not doing the Rose Bowl parade for RFD-TV because... just too many steps to climb up to the broadcast booth at the Rose Bowl.
Sure,
so
sure.
I'm taking a rest from that this year.
Well, you know what? You've earned it. I was going to ask you about the farm bill. You know, as we go into 2018, we're talking about tax, the tax situation,
right?
The new tax code, the tax bill in 2018. What's the status of a new farm bill?
Well, it's supposed to be done by the end of next year, but if it is, that'll kind of be a precedent because we always go a year or two past the deadline. The main concern on the farm bill right now, as far as farmers are concerned, is what's going to happen to crop insurance, because in the last farm bill, crop insurance was put in place to replace the disaster payments that would be required to go through Congress whenever there was a hurricane,
sure,
or a blizzard and that sort of thing. You had to go to Congress and you had to pass special legislation. So rather than that, in the Farm Bill, the last edition, they really made crop insurance stronger. Farmers still pay a portion of the premium, but they do get help from the Department of Agriculture. And there are a lot of people who say, well, that's too expensive. We ought to get rid of it. In the long run, though, it's cheaper than the disaster programs that Congress has to come up with. Chicago Tribune has been a staunch opponent of crop insurance, calling it a federal boondoggle, and I disagree with that completely. I think it has been very helpful. I think it has been easier for government program to evolve. So they're going to be very concerned about that. Incidentally, how's this for name dropping? I'm having lunch today with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue.
Oh, good.
And about half a dozen agricultural leaders from Arizona. The secretary is in the state for the annual meeting of the Agricultural Retailers Association. And I don't know how my name got on the list, invited to a very small luncheon.
Yeah, well, Sonny Perdue's walking around going, I'm having lunch with Orion Samuelson.
You know what he calls Max and me?
No.
The Harry Carey of agriculture.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. He knows. He knows. Except you drink less at work.
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah.
So
off work, I'm not so sure. But
So speaking of that, I have in my office last year's Orion Samuelson Christmas present, which you never took home. Are you aware of that?
I did.
No. I've got I got a bottle of Belvedere, and what's the other one? I've got I've got a couple of bottles
Belvedere.
Of
Belvedere. Yeah, both of them are Belvedere, probably. And I never took it home.
Never took it home.
Well,
no. So it's now aged another year, which I guess makes it even better.
Yeah, and so it's probably going to be more expensive for you, and I hate that. So
no.
We'll just leave it at the price of a year ago.
Well, listen, I just look forward to you having it. So we're going to have that in your car the next time you're at this fine establishment we call WGN Radio. Dave, say hi.
That'll be December 15th.
Right.
Big O, you'll be glad to know that Steve asked me in our meeting the other morning, does it go bad?
I'm quite
no,
an expert.
No, it doesn't go bad, especially Belvedere. Others are good, but that's my favorite.
Hey, I got another question for you, speaking of the holidays. When I was a kid, I grew up in dairy farm country in upstate New York.
Right.
And there was one farm in particular that did it up for Christmas. And I mean lights all the way down the fence line. Probably, it seemed like a mile. It was probably more of an eighth of a mile from their house. All the way back up to the house and the barn completely decorated. Is there an area that does up that kind of holiday lights, a farmer's area? I mean, I know there's some downstate, but around here?
I'd say basically it's farm to farm. You don't, although it gets to be competition sometimes, so yeah, you will get some neighbors get light up against you, but there are a lot of individual farms all over farm country that really go to extra lengths to decorate the farmstead. And the thing that I enjoy, because I flying the Cessna in December at night, it's really fun to see the farms, every 2 or 3 miles from the sky.
Oh, yeah.
And what a great job they do. As a matter of fact, December 9, we're going to take our TV show to Frankenmuth, Michigan, because we do a Christmas show every year at various country churches around the country. And we're going to a magnificent church there that is also, it's the home of Christmas around the year. They have a Christmas shop there. They're online. And they just have anything and everything having to do with Christmas and Christmas decorations. And so that'll be part of the stop. But they have a great choir. And I know that area will be decorated for Christmas, definitely.
Now, I'd just like to clarify, even though Thanksgiving is over, the pumpkin spice season appears to be continuing. I cannot believe it. And, okay, Eric is Barry. You walk into any store now, everything is pumpkin. You've got the pumpkin cereal, pumpkin coffee. You go to Starbucks, they got the pumpkin. So, and you've said before that Illinois is the largest producer of pumpkins, correct?
Yes.
This has to be great, right? This is great for Illinois.
It is, and for the people who produce it, the area around Peoria is where they grow most of the pumpkins in the state, but it happens throughout the state. And Pekin, I think, is the town near Peoria. It is the world pumpkin capital because they produce and ship more canned pumpkins from that plant than anywhere in the country.
How about that? How about that? All right, my friend, we're out of time, but it's always great catching up with you. Please say hi to your lovely wife, Gloria, and I will catch up with you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Orton Samuelson, we're back with a quick round of the Wang Dang Doodle Picks. Get your Wang Dang Doodle Picks ready. We'll do them next, and then it's Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep. It's happening again.
Commissioner Sandberg is here. We're going to have to do this quickly now. And we'll get a celebrity off the air. Is that the plan?
Yes. I think Orion is our celebrity.
All right. We'll get an Orion celebrity pick off the air. Steve Grzanich will be picking.
Actually, Ryan Burrow is going to be picking for the news department.
And I got Bertrand breathing down my neck. He wants a seat. So can I get mine in?
Sure.
All right.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. We're just giving you some time.
Okay. What do we need?
A game and a score.
Seahawks over the Eagles, 37-35.
Eagles losing. Wow. How about that? All right, Dave, you're picking for John DeCoste because you hate him and you never want him to pick.
Yes, and I'm going to take the New Orleans Saints over the Carolina Panthers, 30-27. Okay, I think I beat them.
Okay, we just wanted to make sure you heard the explosion if the 10 seconds ran out.
It's your turn.
Well, I've got to go with the inept bowl. That would be the San Francisco 49ers and the Chicago Bears.
Don't do it, Steve.
Mitch Trubisky Bears victory.
Yes.
17-6. I know. I'm drunk on Orion's booze. And what's the last one?
Mary and Mike. Mike's got to do it. I didn't even know we were doing this now.
You're supposed to be on top of this.
I wasn't prepared. You got 10 seconds, guys. Go, Mike.
I mean, are we going to pick something here?
Yeah, you are.
I believe you're just blown up.
Yep. I don't even know what week we're on. Week 13. Yes, oh, I was looking 13. At week 12.
pick Washington, Dallas. It's tonight.
We'll do it after the show.
We'll do Washington, Dallas, Redskins, 37-24.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Couple minutes before 10. Bill and Wendy are next. Stand by for that. The Wang Dang Doodle caller. We'll take the seventh caller now for prizes at 312-981-7200. All you got to do is give Sandberg your pick, and we'll see how you do as well. 312-981-7200. Bill and Wendy next.